Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Goalie Science, the podcast that bridges the gap between goaltending, science, and peak performance. I'm your host, Jamie Phillips, a former professional goalie, currently pursuing a doctorate in physical therapy and specializing in goalie performance coaching. Joining me as always is Dr. Ben Cernik, a seasoned goalie coach and sports analytics specialist. Whether you find yourself at home, on the road, or at the rink, grab a cup of your favorite beverage and let's drop the puck on this week's episode.
Jamie, it's another week and we're back to fighting on the internet after we said we were going to stop.
Well, you know what? It's so funny because, like, I don't know if it's just like Dunning-Kruger effect or if it's just people that actually, I think it's just Dunning-Kruger effect. And yeah, there's a lot to kind of talk about, but this is going to be a science heavy episode. So 2 weeks in a row of science heavy episodes. Yeah. So what if you are unfamiliar in terms of why we are fighting on the internet? It's not Ben and I fighting with each other. It's us fighting against really just one person. But it's because I reposted an old video that I made a couple of years ago, and it was just talking about why certain shots are impossible to react to. And because, you know, there is like a peak reaction speed, like your brain can only process information so quickly. So how do goalies stop these shots when the shots in the NHL and different levels exceed that rate? And we've talked about it, and Ben's going to bring up a ton of research, a lot of it in European handball. And it just goes, and it's a lot of it in baseball too as well, where essentially let's just call it pattern mapping. The brain has seen so many shots that it's able to create a map of patterns in terms of of all the conditions of the blade, of the player approaching, of all the different things, the variables that contribute to a shot. And it's able to come up with basically the best estimate of where that puck is going and how fast and what does the body need to do. And that's why a good example is if you play, and Ben's going to talk about this later, but think about every time someone like knuckle pucks it or whiffs on a shot, it's really hard to stop versus when someone just comes in and rips it and you're used to them ripping shots all the time, you make a save. So I made this post. All right, I guess I reposted this post, and someone on the internet, an old dog, said that he said something about me data mining. I was Silicon Valley data mining, which I just one thing I don't know how to do. That's code at all. So definitely not.
Yeah, no, you're awful.
I'm horrible at it. And that I was trying to moneyball hockey, and that we should essentially keep science out of hockey. The problem is science has been involved in all athletics and hockey for a very long time. Hockey has been quote unquote moneyballed for like a really long time.
Hold on. There's literally a website called moneypuck.com. Like, that is very literally a public statistics modeling website that if you're not using, you should. If you like stats.
And also,
go on.
Like, Ben, as a statistician, also consults with pro teams in terms of drafting and evaluating players. And this is not new. Like, this didn't just appear overnight. Like, this has been existed for a long time. And then we can just like continually just talk about things. But in terms of all the replies, there's one reply that just cracked me up so much. He said something about like, you ever heard of Herb Brooks and also like the Red Army hockey team? And I think like the funniest thing is again, the Dunning-Kruger effect, where like the little you know, the more confident you are in terms of things versus the more you know, the less confident you are. The Soviet Union in all sports, like the vast majority of sports performance research that we have and the basis of almost all things, including strength training, comes from the Soviet
Union. Especially strength training.
Especially strength training. Like, there's always, if you're going to do some sort of sports performance literature or research, you're probably going to get in the archives and you're going to find out the Soviets did it 60 years ago. And it just hasn't been translated yet.
There's so much. Yeah, there's so much stuff still in Russian that has not been translated at all.
So I love that. Like, this, I love that argument. Yeah. Well, the Russians didn't do this. Yeah, they did. They did it a long time ago. Actually, your argument should have been, the Canadians and Americans didn't do this back in the 60s and 70s. I'd be like, you're kind of right. But just say like the Russians, they're just the worst argument. Oh God, it's just so funny.
I mean, like, you can learn so much from old Russian behavior on so what like influences today. Like, a lot of stuff that we know about like practice design in terms of like the physiology of practice and training is Russian. Like, concepts of periodization, like how you should taper leading up to games if you play a set schedule, how you balance different periods of time. Like, this is all like 40 to 50 year old, like, again, like the Red Machine. This was them, all on them.
Yeah, so, like, it was pretty all of it. Like, plyometrics, like aka shock training, like Verkhoshchenko, like, this is all Russian stuff. Everything we have now, it's just so fun. And also, like, in his original message, he was like, judging the play, entering the zone, and like reading the release, all these things. It's like, these are feel. I'm like, yeah, actually, no. Well, yes, but also you can actually quantify all of these things. They're all quantifiable.
Which is a perfect transition, because let's talk about it, Jamie.
Talk science.
How we know. Let's do a little bit of science. Let's do a little bit of story time, and we'll kind of wrap it all together. So one of the great things about goaltending is that it is a very simple position. Your job is to stop the puck, right? Mm-hmm. The unfortunate part is all the parts that go into that. Very complicated.
Very hard.
Very, very, very complicated. Yeah, super difficult. If it was easier, we would both be in the NHL. We're not. So one thing I think is really important. So again, your approach is all about how when shots are hard enough and from close enough, a lot of the times, there's not enough time to react to it. So there's a level of anticipation and the level of moving prior to the puck being released or moving as the puck is, like, directly as the puck is released. And there's not a ton of research in hockey. And I can give you a couple of reasons why. First and foremost, the technology we use for gaze behavior. And so the lab that I work in, we do gaze behavior research. Our colleagues do gaze behavior research. One thing about the eye trackers, technology has changed a lot in the last like 5-10 years, so it's a lot better. But for a long time, it was super expensive. And basically, a little bit of sweat will break the entire device. Like, the slightest amount of fluid will just destroy tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment. And so, why have we not done a ton of hockey stuff on that, Jamie? You know,
expensive.
It's over under the mask. It's a little hot in there. Yeah, it's expensive, and the tech is, like, again, it's gone a lot better, and I'm sure we'll start to see it moving forward. There is some research being proposed. It is sponsored by the Pittsburgh Penguins, and they're looking at scanning behavior. I'm not sure if they'll be using eye trackers for it, but they're going to be using different systems for it, but that's TBD. It's a funded PhD, so if you're a master's student graduating, you want to go to the Norwegian School of Sports Science. Pittsburgh Penguins will fund you to do it. But we can draw on ways. We can draw on research from other fields. And so baseball is a big one. But ones that are actually even bigger, like you mentioned before, Jim, is handball. And even bigger than that is cricket.
So I think, like, cricket, again, like, this, like, pitch. Us as North Americans, like, we take for granted, like, how big other sports are in the world. Again, like, we just get in that mindset. We're like, oh, yeah, like, we're the only place in the world. No.
Yeah, sure aren't. There's, and again, like, cricket is a massive international sport. Handball, actually also massive. Jamie, a little geography pop quiz. Germany is twice the population of Canada. Yeah, you didn't know that.
You're right. I didn't know that.
Anyway, but I wanted to talk about this one study, which is really, really cool. So, again, this study came out 13 years ago, April 2010. And all it was a study on comparing cricket batter behavior when it was a pitching machine, or in the case cricket, a bowling machine, versus a live bowler or live pitcher from our North American folks here. And you wouldn't believe this. There is significantly different batter behaviors between the machine and the pitcher.
I actually would believe
that. And so in the instance, there's different, there's difference in front foot timing. There's difference in, like, the windup of the bat. And the task is still the same. They're trying to hit the ball, right? So what is the difference between the machine and the live bowler, Jamie?
Oh, it's all
the information that you get from it.
The
body positioning, right?
The many years of watching a human being bowl a ball at you versus all of a sudden. It's one thing, like, if you only train on a machine, you'd be good until a human comes at you.
Exactly, right? Because you learned this set of information and this in what goes on. And there's, like, a really classic model in the skill acquisition research. And so that's kind of one of the worlds that I occupy. And it's, like, a really old model called the Newell's model of constraint. It basically says that every time we do a task, there is a constant information is received from the individual. So the person doing it, what the task is itself, and then the environment, right? And so, like, if it's a machine or a bowl, where that's the environment changing, right? And so they're fundamentally, by this definition, two different tasks, right? Mm-hmm. So you would expect it to be differently. So again, like, because there's different levels of information, there's different behaviors, because the task changes a little bit. And so that's kind of the first hint at, okay, so we understand that it's not as simple as just watching the ball or watching the puck, right? There has to be something more there, because it changes our anticipation and changes our behavior. So we'll put all these papers, again, in the show notes of the podcast, in the YouTube. I'll make sure that we have all that up. So I'm not going to dive too deep into where you can find them. They will be there. But this leads over to another paper that I really like, and it's really, really cool. It's a paper that's titled "The Accuracy of Outcome Anticipation, But Not Gaze Behavior, Differs Against Left and Right-Handed Penalties in Team Handball Goalkeeper." So basically, this paper looked at the differences in goalkeeper behavior when the person taking a penalty, or just, like, basically a free throw in handball, was right versus left-handed. And to really summarize what they found there is that the gaze behavior of the goalkeeper, so the environmental information that they were picking up for right and left-handed, was pretty similar. They were looking at the same points, again, obviously on the opposite sides, but they were picking up the same information, same release behavior, same ball location. But what significantly changed was the ability of, like, basically stopping, and the ability of anticipation changed, and the body behavior changed right versus left-handed. And because the gaze behavior was the same, the argument is just the processing speed is slower on the left-handed side because they've seen it a lot less times than the right-handed side. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really, really powerful, it's a really cool study. Like, again, a really, really great study. We'll link it in the show notes. But again, I think that highlights that fact that, you know, even though these are elite goalkeepers, ability, they're still looking for the same information. They know what they're trying to look at. They still have the same approach, but they just haven't seen it as much. So the body's ability to pick up the subtle details, the extra information that they're not actively focusing on, is harder. Right. And so I think that, again, really highlights familiarity. So you mentioned on your post, and you mentioned even just now, like, when a little, like, fluky shot happens and we get caught off guard by it, it's because that's a different result than what we were anticipating based on all the information we've picked. And again, this is a very nerdy topic, but I think this is so cool to understand, right? Like, that this is the reason you need to have high quality repetitions and a range of different repetitions is so that you have seen these patterns happen enough time, right?
Yeah. And so it is, it's a nerdy topic, but again, like that's, you know, it's actually more your realm. It's both of our realms to read the nerdy topics, and it's kind of been my realm for you to read it and then talk to it about me, and then I translate it into a more general pop so that people understand it. But it's important that we have a why we do things, and a why and a how, so that way we can slowly distill and be able to try to get like the baseline and the lowest level fundamental training and thinking so that we can just slowly expand on it. There's one thing to be like, oh, you know, my goalie is struggling at tracking. Well, let's just shoot more pucks at his glove. Well, that might not necessarily be the case. That might not be the issue. And so we have to look at actual science in order to help us think critically and help us to make informed decisions in terms of why we are doing these things. And I think I say this every week, but like it always comes down to thinking critically about things. And one of the things that I'm very like proud of that I get a lot of feedback from my goalies is they like to say that I can like basically, because you know, I spent a lot of time looking at biomechanics and all the things of the body where we look at, you know, I have a more than a surface level understanding about why things happen. You know, why is this goalie's leg trailing behind him? Why are their hands doing this? And so I think it's really, really important. And so just to always be like, oh, well, they should just be able to feel it. Or like, oh, it's just natural instinct. Well, yeah, like definitely natural instinct.
Yeah, that's part of it.
It's part of huge part, but it's also like a massive reason to it. Like Andrei Vasilevskiy isn't good at hockey just because he woke up one day and started playing hockey. He had years and years and years of training and exposure to all these things. And then all these things that he's exposed to, these variables, are all quantifiable, and meaning that we can take it and be like, okay, like this is important. Why is he successful over other reasons? He was exposed to this many shots and these many shots, and like it all adds up, and it turns into, you know, moneyballing the game, as people would say, even though that's completely not it, because moneyballing is basically trying to predict outcomes based on past performances. We're just trying to come up with some answers and possible hypothesis in terms of why we do things and if we need to change them or not. So
yeah, this is good. This is something that I've been wanting to talk about, and then little teaser, but we're going to be having next month a practice design and skill learning expert coming on the podcast. So obviously I'm super excited for that. But this is why this discussion of understanding how you need to do good quality reps and getting a correct number of reps, but it's also important why we can't just do drills where it's like, okay, we're shooting at your glove, and then we shoot at your glove 50 times. There's a time and place for that. Confidence. Very, very, very new goalies who are there for fun and basic learning. But like if that is your approach to getting better at puck tracking, it's not going to work as well as other things, because we're giving you too much extra information that you don't get in a game.
You're probably doing a disservice long term. So like you said, like beginner goalies, especially when it comes to like, hey, I'm shooting at your glove. Shooting at your glove is not like, hey, that's usually not the solution to fix your glove. What else, like I'll say is if someone is having a muscle, their muscle memory is kind of giving them bad habits and we're trying to break something, then yes, I'll often do like, hey, we're doing 20 shots to your glove and they're high. So I don't want your gloves to track in and out. I just want you to work out. And then once we get that pattern, then we add in that reaction time, and then they usually default back to old habits. We talk about it, we address it, then we fix. So there is a time and place, but I do see too often where it's like always shooting at this shot coming out, I'm shooting low stick, make your save, come across, now I'm shooting high blocker, make your save. And it's one thing to do that with beginners. And even with beginners, it's almost like, probably don't even need to do that either.
You don't need to do that either.
I'm not a big fan of that approach.
Yeah, and like I said, we always talk about here at the Goalie Science Podcast that we make mistakes and we learn from them. So in my path, I'm absolutely someone who's done like very, very what would be considered deconstructed learning and block learning, where it's like, okay, we're going to work on this exact pattern over and over and over again, right? The way I've shifted my perspective on this is, you can, if you want to do a drill that is working on someone's glove, just don't tell them you're shooting at their glove. You can still shoot at their glove 80% of the time in that drill, right? Like, yeah. That's just a solution. Like, oh, like, again, I was working with a goalie the other day, and he's like, yeah, I've had a hard time catching pucks lately. And this is a goalie I've known for a little while, and they track the puck well. They do a good job of tracking pucks in. They do a good job of scanning. And so initially, my first assumption is, okay, it's not actually their glove hand, right? It's not that their glove's not probably not working or they're not catching pucks, right? It's probably something, it's some behavior leading up to that save. And so my hypothesis a lot of the time is goalies not getting either their feet set in a situation where they've come off the post or off the goal line, or in a place situation like on a rush play where they may need to be retreating, they might actually be too flat-footed and not getting a little retreat or not being mobile. I normally think it's like it's a setness thing, right? And sure enough, that was what it was. They were coming off the post and they were just getting that forward drift. And we've talked about that before, Jamie, how when you're moving from goal line out, that is the time to try and get set. And then when players are moving out to in, yeah, you probably should have a little bit of a retreat. But yeah, that's all it was, right? Like, they were doing a good job. It wasn't a glove hand thing. It was just like they were part of that, you know, if you go back to that task person environment model, right? They were the act of making the glove save, they were moving their body. So their environment and their personal being was different than what they were, you know, how they had trained to make those saves, right? So they weren't trying to make the saves the same way that they had trained to make them before. And they were having a bit of a harder time with it, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. And so
some high level science stuff here.
High level science. And we talked about blocked and segmented practice. Like, we've talked about this many times, and we're sort of deviating away from the initial science, but it's all, thing is too, is like,
it's all the same though. No.
Everything, like, honestly, when it comes to sport, when it comes to almost all things in life, especially sports, it is honestly like all science. And you're going to be like, oh, well, there's natural ability. Yes, but those natural abilities are also built on science. Like, you know, like you think of like just like going to any like hockey's still a little bit behind the curve in terms of like sports performance on the ice stuff. Gym's getting a lot better. You know, sometimes people are more working with like force plates and velocity trackers and different things that could offer good insight. But then you take like, I always like to like compare it to baseball. There's a lot of money in the States for baseball. And then you have like these awesome baseball like performance centers where they're breaking down the video and they're like, you're doing all these things and the pitching and the batting. And then when the guys make it to the major leagues and everyone's like, oh, it's their natural ability. Yeah, but it's a natural ability that they've trained through hours and days and weeks and months of total time spent in these like sports performance centers. And you know what I love it too is like, especially when it comes to like a lot of the old dogs and the old guard. It's like they have that like Rocky versus what's the Russian's name there? I want to say, I keep saying Khal Drogo, but that's the guy from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it is. I actually don't know. And so the movie, I'm sorry for everyone who loves Rocky. I have no idea.
But you know what you mean. It's like Rocky versus the Russians using the machines. He's on performance enhancing drugs, and it's like the, you know, capitalism versus communism, and capitalism always wins and like stuff. But like, it's just that mindset that like, is if you just work hard and you have that natural ability, you always succeed. And yeah, there are some times we have outliers and that's the case. But like, also if you have that outlier and you put them in like a really good scientifically like back training environment on top of allowing him to use his natural talents without like squandering them or like pushing them down, then that's when you get like super freak athletes.
Yeah, there's this like really wonderful definition of talent, which was originally written in German. And I'm going to even butcher the translation, but the basic idea is that like talent is the idea that if you hold everything else constant with a person, their biology, their training history, their home environment, if you hold all of that constant, you can find out what separates one person from natural talent. And the obvious point of that definition is we can't do that.
Can't do it.
Right? Yeah. No, you can't do it. And that's okay. You don't need to. Right? But at the same thing, you said it nicely, right? Like there's the pop science belief that if you just practice enough, that's all you need, right? Like you can practice your way. And that's not true either, right? That's a disservice. It's a disservice to tell people that if you just practice more and train optimally, you'll make it. That's not true.
No.
There's again, yeah. there's biology and there's physiology and there's history. There's a lot that plays into it. So there is science in hockey. But let's bring it back to again, our original topic, which is supposed to be about puck tracking and what we learned about it. And I know this is all tied in, but it kind of always comes back down to what's actually happening and then how do we train it, right? That's mostly mm-hmm. what we talk about here on the show. And so I think the big response from the video is that people were like, oh, okay, cool. This is really exciting. Now I know why I'm able to make saves like this. And I think one of a really good example that we can all relate to is when someone takes a shot and we make a glove save and our head doesn't move for a second. We've all done that where someone takes a shot, we reach out, we snap, we catch it. We didn't track that puck at all. We did not watch it all the way in, but we knew the release. We knew where it was going to go, and we knew where our body needed to go in space because we'd done it thousands and thousands of times. That's really cool. That's what this all comes down to. It's like we're able to process it. I think what's really funny too is if you watch in the NHL these great glove saves that goalies will make in tight, when you watch it in slow-mo, the puck hits their glove before their glove moves.
Oh, way before.
Right? Like it literally... Yeah, but like there was I saw a Devin Levi highlight the other day where he made this great glove save and tight, but he was just positionally perfect, right? Like his hand was in a good spot and the shot came. He did not move his hand at all. The puck goes into the pocket, you know, third of a second later, windmill. And it's just like, he didn't move it at all. He did not move his glove at all. The shot went off the stick directly into the glove and then he did his little, and we all do that. It's a rite of passage of the goalie to do that. You make a glove save, you gotta, you know, you got to show people you did it on purpose. But that's the reality. He had probably knew that the shot was going, didn't have to move. Like he had picked that up and then he had also gotten into the right position prior to the shot happening.
That's the key point there is because someone listening might confuse it for you saying like he didn't deserve to make that save. It just hit him.
Oh, but he
pre-positioned himself based on all the prior information and his ability to read that play and judge a pattern map. To put everything where it needs to be in the right spot, which we just call positioning, and then enough to just track that initial release enough so that he's able to, that puck hits his glove. That's it.
Yeah. And that's it. And that's just the matter of fact, right? Like it's not really something to be upset about or something to disagree with. It's just, that's the product of really good training. Devin Levi, obviously, people have probably been following the story. It's a really cool story how successful he was kind of for the past few years at every level he's been at. But I think people are also going to pick up as he's very open about all the extra training he does. And he's definitely someone who does everything, right? He is like, I'm going to try to give myself every single possible edge training wise. And again, that's great. Like, I think it's awesome to see the variety of training options and people trying to explore different things. But it's also something for people to be in mind of, like, again, if you just do exactly what he does, you're not going to be Devin Levi. I think you have a post about that too, right? Like, you're not Andre Vasilevsky or something, is one of your old.
I have a Vasilevsky. Like I have a Vasilevsky one and I have a UC Soros one. Actually, I might bring back the Vasilevsky one this week.
Yeah. And like, but that's great, right? Like, Andre Vasilevsky is this, what a fun goalie to watch. He's fun because he does so many things amazingly well from a technical side, but then he's also this incredibly great anticipator and athletic goalie who can extend and make those big highlight reel backdoor saves. Like, he's such a delight to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But you, again, like, he's trained a very, very specific way for a long time. He had probably a really, really great training environment growing up. And ultimately, you know, he wasn't perfect in the playoffs either, was he?
Yeah.
So... I don't know. It's like, again, you shouldn't train like him. You need to optimize your training to what you need to work on, right? Like if you're a hyper flexible goalie and you're going to spend 4 hours a day stretching, it's like, okay, there's, you know, you should probably keep stretching to keep that flexibility, but you can maximize your time better, right? Like the same thing, if you're someone who's find yourself getting beat and tight a lot, maybe you're looking at Jamie's post and you're going, uh-oh, like, do I not have enough in tight reps so I can't pick up the release quick enough? I need to like train just my eyes. No, probably not. You got to probably consider your positioning, probably also have to consider like the style of training that you're doing and where you're getting beat on those plays, right? Because sometimes it's really easy for the goalie to get caught in these like little ruts and oversimplifying what you think could be happening, right?
I agree 100%. And so ultimately to wrap it up is a lot of things we go, a lot of things, almost all the things we do, there is science involved. If you don't really understand the science, that's okay. You can always just ask. And if you don't agree with it, that's okay too. But Ben and I will come at you on the internet for it. But like I was saying, it's good to always, you don't always want to play into your strengths. Keep your strengths and build up your weaknesses. And if you need help trying to figure out what those are, try to work with an expert. Like I talk about all the time, like I sent like two or three goalies this week. I referred them to a mental performance coach because that's what they needed. I often refer people to Dr. Curtis Ackerman at Milton Vision and Milton Sports Vision in Milton for just like vision training. And like, that's really, really important. So just refer to experts when you need it. But Ben, before we wrap this up, let's go back to hot takes because I miss doing hot takes. So I'll give you...
Hold on. Before we... I have something that before we do that, I didn't tell you this at all. So this is completely unplanned. A guy that I work with, a friend of mine, so shout out Mark Robb, stops me yesterday and goes, Ben, new segment for your show. Good shot, bad goal. Where... What? Yeah, exactly. So people who aren't watching this and are listening, Jamie just gave the face of absolute approval. Yeah, good shot, bad goal. And I have my good shot, bad goal of the week. I came prepared.
All right.
My good shot, bad goal of the week last night. So we're recording this on November 5th. So November 4th, Buffalo, Toronto. Jeff Skinner gets a wicked pass, comes in on like a half breakaway, takes the slap shot from around the faceoff dot, goes short side, top corner.
Starting the old lawnmower. Pulling the shoulder away.
Look, we are big Joe Wall fans. And we can acknowledge when Jeff Skinner makes a good shot, still a bad goal. So that's our first good shot, bad goal of the week.
If you're watching this on YouTube, I actually will take the time and effort to cut that up and add it to the clip. So you're welcome. But I like that good shot, bad goal. So actually, it's super funny. So that brings me into my hot take. So after these last three games, is Joseph Wolf bad? I just want to say that. I know someone's going to be like, you guys are just all about Wall, but he gave up like 11 goals in his last two starts. Like, it happens.
Please go back and watch goals.
It happens.
Yeah. I mean, with the exception of that Skinner goal, I actually don't think any of them were really his fault. So,
that's my first fake hot take. Ben, what do you got?
My hot take is, why are more people not talking about the 2017-2018 Jacksonville Iceman shot controversy?
I think we should.
Those of you, again,
who should be a pod in itself.
Let's just do it. We'll do a little brief intro. So okay. For those who don't know, last week on the podcast, Jamie told a story about how when he was playing in Jacksonville, he always felt that the shots at home were a little funky. That something was off about the shot. Like, it felt like we never quite had it right at home, and he made a post about it and got some interesting pushback from people being like, you're a liar.
Also, we don't believe you. You're just complaining that your stats are bad. I know my stats are bad. Do you want to know why? I had horrible performance anxiety and depression, and I did not want to leave my bed to play hockey, so I wasn't playing well. But like, and people are like, and like, a lot of the comments will be like, yo, this happens all the time. We know as goalies, like, you know, when you make a save and like you just look up the clock, and if you have shot counters, you want that shot to be, you want credit for that because that's your job. Yeah. That's like, imagine going to work and all of a sudden like you finish your project and it's like, hey, you still have to do that project. And like, no, I did it. Like, no, you still have to do that. You have to do like six projects in order to get one done. So we know that. And the story last pod was that it was often because there was like a Burger King deal where if the other team got more than 30 shots on net, everyone got like a free burger. And so obviously,
hold on. Are we sure it's 30? Because there is a very suspicious amount of games that stop right below 30.
There's
a weird pattern below 30.
Okay. I'm almost positive it was 30, but you might be wrong because I remember that distinctly. But I think the funniest part is like, again, I made some stories of how it's like it pays to have smart friends. We're like, Ben, being the crazy person he is, went and looked at a bunch of different years of Jacksonville Iceman shots versus home.
That's not true. I went through the entire 2017-2018
season. Home and away shots. And what were your findings, Ben?
The findings was that when Jacksonville played on the road, the games Jacksonville were in had 9 more shots per game than games at home over a 72-game schedule. So when Jacksonville played on the road, they would average over almost 5.5 more shots against per game. And when they were on the road, their team would get about 3.5 more shots per game, which when you tally that up, like 9 shot differences, home versus road, is a lot. It's a, like, that's a big difference.
That's a lot. That's a big, big difference. That's like a, that's around like almost 33% difference if you look at sometimes the shots on average through a game.
Your math is awful. It's 16%.
Okay, fine. 16% difference.
Shots.
True.
50 versus 50.
No, yeah, yeah, yes. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right.
But no, but the point is, again, and it's a big difference too. Anyone who knows, and again, before people say, well, like, what about, you know, like some teams are bad on the road versus, you know, at home, which is true. Some teams are better at home than on the road. That happens. Almost an identical winning percentage. That Jacksonville team that year was not 26 wins on the year, 12 of which were on the road, 14 at home. Like, it's, again, so it's really hard to say that there was like a home effect there. You guys were sort of bad.
Yeah, it was the first year of this organization. We weren't very good. I definitely wasn't very good. It was weird because my AHL numbers were really good that year. It's just, I was...
Really good, yeah.
I got... It just, I really got in a mental funk whenever I got sent down. Also, getting sent, called up and sent down 14 times in one season. Sometimes I would get sent down for... I would get sent down. I would get off the plane. I would go practice. I would go home. And I would go to Walmart. And I'd get my groceries. And then as soon as I got back from my groceries, I get a call and you got to come back up. And so I just spent $200 on groceries and I had to get rid of it. And so if you were my roommate that year, Elkin Pierce, you got a lot of free groceries.
You were eating good.
So like there's a lot, like that lot that comes into it. So like it's funny too, because like I know it takes a lot of effort on my part to not chirp back at people. And it sounds bad, but like if you know me, like, if you know me, you know that I'm, like, a very sarcastic, nihilistic kind of guy. I do think I'm pretty quick-witted, and I do like that. You just, when you're in a dressing room and you just give it back and forth, a lot of guys, you got to learn to be quick. So there's a few people that chirped me, and I'll be honest, I typed up some really good replies, and I had to delete them because it was like, Jamie, you're a professional. You're also a healthcare professional. You need to be mature about this. So I really want to rip back on some things just for fun, but I can't. I think the ECHL is probably, or the Jacksonville Icemen are probably going to come after us, because I can guarantee you that I'm going to cut this discussion and put it on my Instagram. And the thing was too, is like, and someone might be like, oh yeah, you're wrong. But for a fact, I remember that they talk about, especially, I noticed it a ton more the year after when I was with Florida. And we come in on the road and they were really skimpy. I'd love for you to track those shots to like Jacksonville the year after.
I'll do it. I'm happy to do it.
They would talk about the ad on like the Jumbotron. And so I was aware that this was a thing. And so I put two and two together really early on. When I played on Jacksonville, I even remember telling the coach and asking the coach to talk to the shot counter because he's missing shots. And then the coach told me to F off and just be better. And I was like, yeah, but also like it would help me to not have to think about that. He definitely did say my face. I definitely remember that. But there was like,
hold on, there is famously a game, and I'd love people to be the judge of this. There is famously a game, I can give you the date, Jamie. It was April 5th, 2018, a home game, Jacksonville. The final score was 5-1. The shots were apparently 17-13.
You almost like just don't believe it.
Like, hold on. Like, yeah, I mean, it's when I saw it, I was like, no. Like, that's
wait.
Right?
Like, you know what we're going to do it as we might have to record another ending to this podcast, because, and I'll cut it in. I'm sure those stats are the game is available online or on Instat. And if someone on Instat clipped those clips, there will be exactly how many shots. And then we have the receipts. And so why are we getting so upset about this? Because honestly, it all comes from just, it started off as a funny story, but then it's kind of funny that this happens. And this isn't like novel. This isn't just in jet. You play minor pro hockey, it's a business. And a lot of these teams don't make a lot of money. So what they need to do whatever they can to maximize sponsorship dollars. Like you have to understand that. And so sometimes there's some point shaving, or phantom assists, or goalies don't get the shots because of this. It just is what it is. But I think it's funny that when people are like, oh, you're so wrong, and then we're like, hey, you know what? We're actually not. And we have the receipts.
Yeah. Look, a 5-1 loss. Like, you're going to tell me you made 12 saves? Like, both goalies made 12 saves in that game? Like, I just don't believe it, Jake.
I refuse.
This is the conspiracy people need to be on board with. Stop wasting your time with the flat earth, and let's get on board with ECHL shot counters. We're coming.
We're coming for you. And once again, if you're listening and you listen, I know people that listen to Instagram definitely don't listen to the pod because the commenters. I understand my stats were bad in Jacksonville. It's because I was bad in Jacksonville. Like, I know it was a bad year. I was not good. I struggle with so many things on and off the ice. That's why I was bad.
Hey, you had a 38 save shutout that season in Jacksonville. People don't talk about that.
I didn't. In Brampton, the first ever win for the Jacksonville Icemen and the first ever shutout in team history were in Brampton, and it was a pretty good game.
And what happened the other time you played in Brampton and I came to see you?
I got pulled within the first 5 minutes, and then ironically, I did end up getting traded to Brampton and had a really good season that was ended, or a really good couple games that was ended by COVID. So that sucks.
Boy, what a time!
I think right. I had one last.
Well, do you have another hot take?
I did have another hot take, but now I forgot what it was because now I'm all like fired up. My heart rate's at like 210.
I forgot. One more final note.
Yeah, and give me
it. The final note is that. None of this matters.
It actually like does.
It doesn't matter. So before people also get upset with us going on the 5-year-old ECHL crusade, we know it doesn't matter. But I think for every goalie,
it matters for other goalies.
Yeah,
because you've been through it, and you just want credit because we're all trying to make it to the highest league possible. And if someone looks at your stats and goes, "Oh, they had an 8.95." instead of a 9-1-2 or something due to shot shaving for a Burger King or Burger King's gonna be so mad at us versus some sort of burger joint promotion. That sucks for that goalie. And I wasn't the only person that played against Jacksonville or in Jacksonville. So it's like, I wasn't the only one. I just have a podcast.
This is a Colton Finney shout out.
Good guy. He's Princeton graduate.
Where his numbers were.
Yeah, he's probably on Wall Street making way more money than I am. I should reach out to him. I haven't talked to him in a long time.
Anyways, but yeah, I know there's a couple. And then, I'm forgetting the name of the other goalie who I, again, tracked all these games for.
Austin Lotz.
Yeah.
I think he retired. He played in the Spill for a while, but I think he goalie coaches somewhere down south now.
Yeah, that's cool. Look, all I'm going to say is you are a bad team, right? Like, Jacksonville's a bad team. Feels a little weird that you were giving up 16, 20, 16, 17, 20. Like, those are the shots, again.
Yeah, those are the shots a good team give up.
You're losing. No, that is not as many shots as a good team's give up.
I know. Trust me, I know. I am very, it's so painful. Like, there's like actually like, repressed trauma from how frustrated I would get.
Look, yeah, like I said, look, 20, 23, 19, 23, 16, 20. That was six home games in a row. Like, either you were the most shut down home team to ever have a 30% winning percentage. This is the lamest crusade in the history of hockey.
It is. But the thing is, too, is it's also making me feel better about, like, my numbers. Because even though, like, I was struggling, it shows that I wasn't struggling as bad. And then in my brain, it's kind of like, okay, you were bad, but you weren't as bad as you thought. And that's okay. So, I needed this.
Hey, this is what we're here for. Everybody, hang out and wait out for part two, the 2018-2019 season, where I spend 35 minutes going through 72 box scores and pulling the shots again.
This is going to be a recurring segment.
Hey, if anyone's listening and you have publicly available statistics and you think you've been hard done by your shot counter, I'll do it. I'll do the math.
Ben will do it for $25 and a Tim Hortons gift card, and he will crunch the stats for you, and you'll get back to your league.
Yeah, exactly. I'll also send a strongly worded email, but only if the season happened more than 5 years ago and has absolutely no chance of having an effect on anyone's personal life.
If you're still listening to the podcast, thanks for putting up with our nonsense. I hope that you also come on this crusade, this journey with us, because I feel like this should be a commercial. If you or a goalie you know was harmed by horrible shot encounters, please call Morgan.
That's exactly it. Now, I do have one final thing to say, is that if you are a goalie who has been affected negatively by a shot counter, what you should do is subscribe to Jamie Phillips's Patreon page, his YouTube page, and then give us a rating on Spotify, iTunes, whatever you're listening to. We appreciate all the support. Everyone who comes up and says they see us on Instagram or listen to the show, we appreciate you, and we're happy you enjoy it. And we hope you learn something here and there from the science, and I hope you have a good laugh at Jamie apparently having 4 shots. So
yeah, and thanks to everyone that, like Ben said, that talks to us in person. I do appreciate it. I love it. And thanks to everyone who comments on YouTube for the algorithm and says for the algorithm needs it.
That's awesome. All right, Jamie, let's wrap it up.
Yeah.
We'll talk some more. And until next time.
Till next time.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.